Have you been hitting the books and listening to lectures all day? It's time to relax, to unwind, and listen up. This is Brooke from Campus Chronicles, your go-to podcast for everything student life. No matter where you are in your academic journey, we have you covered. Think of us as a trusted mentor, friend, and confidant who always has your back. We'll be sharing inspiring stories, thought-provoking insights, and practical advice to help you succeed in and out of the classroom. So get ready to be inspired, enlightened, and entertained. Hello, hello, everyone. I am so incredibly excited to introduce you to an absolutely amazing woman. Her name is Dr. Dominique Thompson of Buzz Consulting. Thank you so much for taking time out of your incredibly busy schedule to be here with me today.
Thank you, Brooke. That's very kind.
Well, I did a little bit of research on Dominique and watched her TEDx, did a little bit of research on her website. And let me tell you, you are in for a special treat today. Now, Dominique, I just gave my TEDx in October of 2023. So I really enjoyed listening to your TEDx and the big impact it's had. But before we get started, I want to know, I'm very curious, what is the Cliff Notes version, if you will, of who Dr. Dominique Thompson is?
Oh, okay. So I'm a GP by background, so a general doctor who looks after all sorts of different people, but I specialized in young people's health. And then I specialized in young people's mental health. And I used to spend all my time chatting with university students on campus, being their doctor. And then I decided to use that knowledge to write some books for them and to try and help anyone who is interested in young people's mental health, improve their services and what they offered to young people. And that's mainly on campuses in universities, but it's also for people in schools.
I love that you were first a doctor. So I have a lot of autoimmune diseases and I wasn't diagnosed till I was in my late teens. And I see how detrimental that's been to my life. So I'm always telling people, they say, oh my goodness, you know, my child's doing this or that. I'm like, oh, get your child tested. And it's the same with mental health, right? We let it go so long and then it comes to kind of a breaking point. Do you think that is, you know, fairly true from your research and what you've seen?
I mean, we know that if you're going to have a mental health problem in your life at all, it's most likely to start before the age of 24 because that's biology. That's nothing that young people are doing. That's just how we grow. But it's also when many things can have an impact, and things like difficult time at school or at home or at university and college, those things can impact. And so my message is always, if you're struggling, you're not alone. Ask for help. Talk to someone, anyone that you trust, to get things started.
And I don't think we acknowledge the environmental aspect of university as much as we could or we should, because you're living with your guardian or your family member. They're taking care of you. They're helping you. They're supporting you. And then when you're thrown into a university setting, I know for me, it was very daunting. And that can be, you know, environmental, social, emotional triggers can start to take a real toll on the mental health.
Yeah, a lot of people find it very daunting, probably more so, unfortunately, after the pandemic, where everybody had a couple of years of their lives just taken out like a chunk, and they didn't get the experiences they would normally have had in terms of, you know, developing social skills, learning how to talk to people, learning how to have those tricky conversations that you might have to have with a flatmate or something later on, you know, your roommates. So lots of people find coming away to college or university challenging because of making friends, money issues, worries about keeping up with academic work. And it's a really tricky time.
And as far as social concerns, I wonder if that'll get better, right? With the rise of the internet and the rise of the little short reels and the TikToks, it's becoming a lot more normalized to be isolated. Even at university, oh, I'm just going to stay in and I'm going to watch shorts because they're very entertaining. They do give that nice spike of feel-good hormones. But then a couple hours later, when you're unproductive or feeling crummy, it didn't help so much.
Oh, no. They are sadly a sort of quick fix that doesn't really do anything. And we've all been there. For me, if there's like little videos of cute puppies, I will just, you know, go to those when I'm feeling stressed. Hopefully not for too long, but I've been there. And I think that's, you know, it's understandable. It feels safe. It feels comforting. I've heard from lecturers and the professionals sort of on the other side, the academics in universities, saying, you know, nobody comes to the lectures. They feel safe at home. It's not that they're sort of lazy and don't come. They might be on their screen or at home behind a screen, but they're not leaving their room because it feels comforting. And we need to help students, young people get out, connect with other humans. Humans need humans, but we need them face to face. So we need to make sure that we do have those interactions because they will also give us those feel good hormones, but they are longer lasting and much, much healthier bonds, really, when we start to meet other people.
It is. And I think if you stay alone for a long period of time, it just becomes normal. And you don't really necessarily remember what it feels like to get a hug from a close friend or to be in some sort of community group or community sport. You start to lose that familiarity with it. And as you lose the familiarity, you're just not quite as motivated to do so. It's very similar to going to the gym, really.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. But being friends with people is so much more fun than going to the gym. I mean, going to the gym, I must say, as a doctor, put my little doctor hat on and say, absolutely, you have to get fit and stay fit in life. That is just a lifetime thing. But that slow and steady gets results. Whereas with friends, you know, that thing of sitting alongside somebody, sharing an experience together, you can't sort of just recreate that online or whatever. It's not the same. We weren't evolved to spend time separated and be healthy still. So it can sound, you know, easy, if you like, for me to say, but actually I think making that little bit of effort, connecting with others, is going to give you such fantastic rewards and friendships. And there will be people that you meet and you think, oh, I don't really want to spend more time with them. But I guess that's all part of the fun of it, isn't it? You're trying and testing out different friendships, different types of people.
Well, and then you build your self-trust too. Oh, goodness, you know, this sort of person doesn't resonate for me, whereas this sort of person does. And I think self-trust is so, it's so intertwined with social connections and social groups. And we don't often make that connection, but it's true. When you are going into an uncommon situation, you have to have a lot of trust for yourself. And that's something that you build by doing uncomfortable things.
Yeah, absolutely. And you certainly discover stuff about yourself when you meet other people. And I think that is particularly true when you arrive at university, on campus, in new accommodation, and you're going to meet a whole host of new people and you're going to find out almost more about yourself than you will about them. You know, what your likes and dislikes are, whether you really are that big a Harry Potter fan, or is that person down the corridor even more crazy about it than you are. But, you know, there are more important things to find out too, but those are the sorts of things that you will find out about yourself. And I just think, you know, the problem is almost so basic at the moment. When I'm talking to teachers who are in schools and dealing with 13, 14 year olds, they're saying to me, our young teenagers don't even know how to start that conversation at the moment. You know, they're sort of so shy, so nervous about getting it wrong. As you say, it's easier to kind of withdraw and spend time on your own, that I've started to suggest to quite a lot of them that even just they start a class before they get going on the, you know, the geography or the history bit, that they just spend 5 minutes in little groups of two or three in a kind of getting to know you thing. You know, ask them, just give them a question that they could ask each other. And it's the same for college students. You know, get that conversational skill going. It might be something simple like, you know, if you were a character in a book, who would you be? Who's your favorite character? And just get that conversation going. Because then when you arrive in a really, you know, perhaps slightly more challenging environment, that first day on campus or in halls, you sort of think, okay, I've spoken to lots of different people within my class in my year. Now I'm going to be more used to talking to these strangers as well. And it's funny, but we seem to have just, you know, lost these skills in the last few years with the pandemic.
Have you explored, this is a bit of a side note, therapy dogs and therapy animals?
Yes. So I've written a little blog about that, to do with, so quite a few universities in the UK are starting to get puppies to be brought in just before exams. There is a bit of science and research, of course, around when you're stroking a dog or a cat, it brings your blood pressure down. And so people wanted to see if it would help the students. I think they were certainly hugely popular. I'm not quite sure how the llamas go down. I know that there are alpaca days at universities and llamas, which is a bit more out there. Maybe that would qualify as one of my more out there things. But it definitely helps, because it's that whole thing of, you know, people coming together, there's a kind of a cute or reassuring or safe thing to be doing, which is petting the dog or petting the, you know, the puppies, or the llama, and people can get chatting and they might meet new people over it. And then they go off to their exams and maybe they're just starting in a slightly calmer zone. And I'm all for it. Yeah.
Speaking of research, took a peek at, you know, some of the workshops you do. So you go into different universities. How are your workshops received? And then what's your favorite one to give out of curiosity?
I mean, the thing for me is that I offer a variety of things and I'll really enjoy sessions where, for example, postgrad students who are often quite stressed, it's fair to say, when you're doing PhD or master's and they're brought together because they might all normally not see each other very much. You know, they're all off doing their research or in different universities sometimes, but on the same course that's shared. So they'll come together and I'll do just like an hour and a half or 2 hours on looking after your mental health as a postgrad student and what are the top things that you can do. And it's just giving them an opportunity to chat with me. And I love it because they often get so involved. I say, okay, tell me something you do for yourself. And I remember the last one, it is about a month or two ago, this guy just went, I sing in the shower. I just thought that was so great. Often it's the girls, if nothing else, who are like, yeah, I do this. I cook. I play sports. But this guy just came straight out with it. I thought, how fantastic. So, you know, I do enjoy those ones because you can tell I love to chat. So I'm always keen to hear what they're doing.
That is so heartwarming too, because men are not as outspoken. They're not as open.
No. And I just thought this was great. You know, he just came straight out with it. And everyone else then immediately felt more relaxed. They were like, oh, well, in that case. So they joined in. So I do enjoy those ones. There are the more, you know, the more difficult and serious ones that I do that I enjoy them in the sense that, you know, it's a difficult topic, but I do spend quite a bit of my work, as you've probably seen from my various LinkedIn posts, is trying to prevent or reduce the risk of student suicide. I know that's a difficult topic, so, you know, people can sometimes get upset hearing about it, but it is such an important strand of work. And a lot of us, you know, do spend our professional time trying to reduce the risks and look at how we can mitigate those risks for students. And I do these workshops with the staff who work in universities, often the well-being staff, or sometimes, you know, the senior staff with the vice chancellor and, you know, whole sort of senior team there to talk about, you know, what's happening in that arena of study and what can we be doing on a practical level to help reduce risks. And that sort of thing I found satisfying because it's gained a fair bit of traction and interest. And we're now, certainly in the UK, we're having conversations about things like compassionate communications, which we just weren't talking about before, but how universities communicate with their students on a day-to-day basis, but also around some of the more difficult things, like if a student is failing, for want of a better word, their course, or, you know, they might even have to leave or something. It's how we deliver that difficult news and thinking about not just how, but even when. So some universities are now not sending out any difficult communications after, say, 2 p.m., so that if there is difficult news to be managed, the students have the opportunity to get the help they need that afternoon straight away. So I'm pleased that some of those themes that I've, you know, picked up in my work have then been sort of fed in and becoming part of a national conversation. Really important stuff.
No, it is incredibly important. And to your point, it is hard to talk about, but if we do not talk about it, and if there are people that are not open to talk about it, the warning signs go unnoticed. And that's probably something you train staff in, correct?
Yes. Oh, yes. I mean, so I've done training. I've talked to all sorts of people, from the people who clean the rooms in the accommodation about things to look out for if they notice, I mean, everything from, you know, stockpiling of medication or any little things that they sort of think are a bit odd, behavior changes. They're often the people, them and the security teams who talk to the students, you know, most days. They sort of see them coming and going. So we've, you know, I've done training with them over the years. I've obviously worked a lot with the teams who are the mental health and well-being teams, but I've, you know, given a fair few talks to the senior teams as well. And I think the key here for me is that it is what we call a whole university approach. It is not just one person's job. It's everybody's job to look after everybody else. And I think that has been a major shift in the last 10, 15 years or so of talking about student mental health wherever I go, to see that shift, that this shared responsibility.
What do you do to take care of yourself when you get a little drained or a little down personally?
I guess now what I do is, well, the one word answer is CrossFit. I discovered that a couple of years ago. I came to it very late in life. I will not reveal my age. You know, and I'm sort of this middle-aged wobbly lady who goes in there and is terribly enthusiastic, surrounded by all the gym bunnies, and they're all so welcoming and so on. And yeah, I completely, when I am there, I cannot think about anything except getting on and surviving the session.
They're working you way too hard for you to have a split psyche about work. And I'll tell you, gym bros are so welcoming and they cheer for you. They clap for you. It's the most incredible thing because they don't outwardly look so.
No, I had all sorts of preconceptions. A friend said, do you want to try it? And I said, absolutely not. And she kept saying, no, please come and try it. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to one session and that's it. Well, here we are 2 years later. I'm still going. Not so much her, but she isn't. But I love it. I've just been completely hooked on that really welcoming community. You feel great. You get the huge endorphin rush, of course, which is what we're all, you know, getting, that makes us feel able to deal with the rest of the day and all the other stuff that comes afterwards. Yeah. So that's my thing.
Oh, me too. Me too. Not CrossFit, but a different type of exercise. And you just have to find what works for you and be very creative. CrossFit might be your thing. Yoga might be your thing, whatever it is. So I'm going to ask you the most challenging question of all. If you are going to share 2 to 3 pieces of advice that you really want our viewership and our listeners to take to heart and remember, what would those 2 to 3 pieces of advice be?
Oh, that's so important, isn't it? To have 2 or 3 things that we sort of live by. I guess, okay, my first one would be to try new things, okay? One of the things that can feel overwhelming and difficult, especially when we've had a difficult time in the last few years, is we stick with what is safe and what we know and what we think we'll be brilliant at and we'll be okay, you know, because we always want to do well and not let people down and so on. But actually, trying new things is so good for our overall well-being, because it builds our self-confidence, even if it goes disastrously wrong. And I've tried to give examples of myself, like trying CrossFit in my 50s, or I went paddleboarding once with my son. The thing that was great is, with those examples, some work, some don't, but you feel great because you tried it. So throughout life, we have to try new stuff. It's literally, again, how we evolved, you know, as humans, you know. So that would be one. And if I had to pick definitely one more, I would encourage people to move away from the concept of finding their purpose in life, which I get a lot of people come to me. A lot of young people used to sit in that chair in front of me and say, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. I'm not sure that my life, you know, has meaning. I don't know what my purpose is. And I would try and sort of dial right back from that and say, actually, don't worry about that, because who can possibly know at 19, 20, 25 what your whole purpose in life is going to be? You know, some people have a purpose. Some people have no specific purpose. They do lots of things. Some people have a purpose and then it changes in the middle of their lives. So let's think more about having a sort of mini daily purpose. Like, what makes us feel good about that day? What could we do that will boost, you know, our self-esteem or make us feel good? And it doesn't have to be every day, of course, but I think I see too many people get sort of worried about needing to have this meaning in life. And actually, it's fine to just do things each day. And it might be something like, you know, I'm going to make a cake for my friend whose birthday it is, or I'm going to go and play a game of football or whatever it is. But it's much more important to sort of wheel back to something manageable and achievable than feeling like you're constantly questioning where you're going with everything.
Yes, that definitely suffices my question. And to your point on the last question, when you're so worried about finding your purpose, you're also stuck in a lot of guilt and a lot of shame for having not found it yet. And shame, I read this study, and I would be curious to know if you agree, that shame is the lowest emotion that a human can essentially feel.
Absolutely. It is. And it's one of the things that I'm very vocal about, should we say, when I give my talks to parents of teenagers. This is slightly different, but shaming your teenager is literally the worst thing you can do in terms of connecting with them to try and, you know, get behavior change or get them to understand something, because it is such a negative emotion that they will switch off, disconnect, and not listen you know, you won't make any progress and it will damage your relationship with them. So you're absolutely right. Shame is unhelpful. And I feel, you know, that we do see too many people feeling that emotion when there is absolutely no reason to at all. And one of those things was when people came in and felt, you know, that their life had little purpose, shall we say. And I would try and have those conversations to sort of like just come back to something much more manageable.
Mm-hmm. Because when you come in and, oh my goodness, my friend or my colleague has such an amazing purpose and I can see it in action. I can see her social media feed and it's so incredible. That does really breed those feelings of shame. And if you had them a lot in your adolescence and your childhood, it's bringing back that nasty cycle. So I'm very vocal too. Oh, don't shame. And people say, I'm so sorry. I'll be like, you can say thanks for waiting for me, right? I'm so sorry versus thanks for waiting for me. It really is a big energetic difference.
Oh yeah, actually, weirdly, that's one of the things we started doing at my practice. So we doctors often run late because we're sort of swept up. We're talking about all these sorts of things. And I said to my colleagues, when you open the door for the next person, you know, calling the next person in, don't apologize, because actually the reason you're running late is because you're spending so much time and energy listening to the young person in front of you. Just say, thank you for waiting. Come on in, tell me how I can help or whatever. But to keep it positive and framed like that, I think is actually really important for the people who are working as well, not to feel constantly exhausted and drained and guilty for running late.
So my last question for you is, if you could just kind of etch in the brain of the young people listening, one small little 2 to 3 word piece of advice, what would that be?
I think I would come back to you're not alone. I think it is the thing that when you are young, you perhaps haven't yet got that fantastic support network around you. You may not have made all the connections you have, certainly obviously not made the ones you're going to make in your life. And you can feel very alone. And I think you even feel it emotionally more strongly, as in the brain, the teenage and young adult brain feels that aloneness more strongly than as we get older. So I think telling young people they're not alone, people are out there, people like me, like you, who are interested in them, who want to talk to them, who literally spend our lives talking about this stuff. We are there. So I think that would be the thing that I would really, really want to impress on them, is that they're not alone and that there is support out there. There is help out there. Obviously, it's important to find something that, you know, works for you, whether that's in person, online, there might be a helpful app, you know, whatever it is that works for you, but that definitely you're not alone. I think that is so important to remind the younger generation in particular.
Dr. Dominique, I've had so much fun with you. So thank you so much for coming, for spending your afternoon with me. It is incredibly appreciated. And thank you for joining us on another episode of the Campus Chronicles podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me on Campus Chronicles. I hope you found our discussion informative, inspiring, entertaining, and fun. We are always working hard to make sure that our episodes are the very best they can be, which means we need your help. If you liked what you heard, remember to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and drop us a review. It helps us to connect with more students who are hungry for success. And remember, the journey never stops. Keep listening, keep learning, keep growing. See you next week for another amazing episode of Campus Chronicles.